Welcome to the Enneagram 2.0 podcast. I'm Beatrice Chestnut.
And I'm Udonyo Pai.
And today we're still talking about motivation.
Yeah, the second episode of this topic. Last one we talked about motivation and the three dominant instincts and the body type. So today is heart type and head type moment.
Yes. So shall we start with type two and asking the question again, what motivates the different types of people? Looking beneath the surface of behavior patterns and what you might expect or any stereotypes and really trying to understand inside each of the types, what are they most motivated by?
Yeah, I can start the other ones, but not this one. You should start this one.
Okay. I think twos are motivated a lot by the impact they have on other people, the impression they make on other people, making connections with other people. I think at the deepest level, it's about trying to feel loved. But of course, we twos often have defenses against love. So we can be a little infuriating to some of the people in our lives when we, you know, really try to achieve greater connection and try to make people like us or love us or respect us or want to be with us. But then there's also a fear of that. There's a fear of love. There's a fear of intimacy, fear of people getting really close, because what will they see when they get really close? And we like to control that. So I think it's impression management, but especially forging meaningful connections with other people, being likable so that people have a positive impression of us. But I also think there's things like being in relationship, having good relationship, making the relationships in our lives, the most important relationships, okay, making them satisfying, achieving a positive overall connection with other people. You know, some people would say that twos are motivated by being needed. And I kind of want to say, I disagree with that. I think that being needed is more of a means to an end for twos. It's more of a compulsion that you do when you're feeling insecure or want to win people over. It's not necessarily, I mean, it's definitely something that feels good when people say, oh, we really needed your help or we couldn't have done it without you. But being needed to me does not motivate me as a two. I have a lot of ambivalence about that. On the one hand, I want to be close to the people in my life. And if that means they know they can rely on me and I can meet their needs, that's a good thing. But I usually want to know that that's going to be reciprocal. But it's hard to talk about that for twos. It's hard to talk about needs. So being needed, I wouldn't say is the biggest motivator, although I think sometimes people think it is. And even being helpful. I mean, I definitely think, again, for me, being helpful is a means to an end. The motivation isn't necessarily just to be helpful or be perceived as someone who's helpful. To me, that's a little bit boring. But it's more to positively impact the people I want to have a positive impact on, right? And not everyone is as important as others, but it's like having a positive impact on the important people on my life. It's achieving stronger, better, deeper connections with people, and doing things in the world, I think, that impact people in good ways generally. Now, I have a social instinct that's second, and so I really relate to that. Like, I like that, and this is a little bit one-ish too, when everyone does the right thing in the social world and everything gets better for everybody, I like that, you know? So if I can do my part, you know, I can feel motivated to do my part, like as a citizen, to, you know, stop at red lights or don't litter, you know, make the world a better place in small ways, in ways that make everybody more happy. Those are things that motivate me as well. Not so much like meeting the needs of people or being seen as someone who's helpful. It's like, yes, I'm motivated to be helpful, but that's just so you will then like me or love me or approve of me. So other people's approval.
I hear a lot. Yes. I hear a lot from Chews that they get very motivated in a relationship when the other person understands them and validates them. But that brings me to one thing that maybe after the Chew we can come back to, which is talking about motivation for all heart types, as we did for body types. Maybe right after Chew we can do that, because I do think to an extent, feeling understood and validated is a hard type thing, not only for Chews, but definitely feeling special.
Yes.
And people feeling pleased or grateful for them is a big motivator. Although for our students, who, for instance, who are part of our personal mastery program and our Chews, we see that is the motivation they lose. More commonly, because when they grow, when they achieve higher levels of awareness, that is not anymore what motivates them. That's a very ego-based thing. But still, this is what we're talking about, motivation from the first levels of awareness. And then I also see that they get motivated when the other person discloses things to them, for them. Like the other person is open and talks about themselves, and they like that a lot. They feel good. But also, if there is a problem in the relationship, I do see that Chews get more motivated to do the same and talk about their parts on relationship if the other one talks first, like the other person owning their flaws before I do. It's something that I see motivating for Chews. And then I think that in general, Chews get motivated by a positive and happy environment. I think this is usually a happy type. And a more positive thinking person, even if at times Chews are not positive, they want things to be positive. They get engaged with fun situations, and they go for things that everybody's excited with.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more of a self-preservation thing, but I definitely get motivated by fun and having fun with people I like. You know, and having positive experiences, pleasure, you know, those kinds of things. And I would say that, yes, another big motivation is to be seen and to be important to the people who are important to me. And so I think that's when I can be more supportive and helpful and, moving forward toward that person to sort of offer more help and support is when that person is important. And I think it's wanting to be special, not in the sense that fours want to be special, maybe in terms of being seen as unique or standing out or extraordinary in some way. It's like being special to the people I want to be special to. You know, they see me as special and as an important part of their life. I think that's a big motivator. But you're right that some of that overlaps into heart types. So being understood, mm-hmm. being heard, being listened to, being taken into account, you know, as you know, maybe you don't want to end up doing something my way, but if you take my view into account, if you let me know you heard me and my opinion, or what I want, what I need or want is important to you, even if you go against that, I can be okay if you don't sort of just overlook me or don't hear me or take my point of view into account. So making an impact on the people that are important. And again, for twos, it's important to remember they tend to be a little more selective. Not everybody is equal in their eyes. Some people are more important to them than others. And I think twos are the prototype for all of us who have a need to be loved. All of us need to be loved. We go about getting the love we want in different ways, but I think twos are sort of about that love need. And so being loved and all of what that can feel like in personality, it can feel a little bit more like false love or being, you know, just being, you know, meeting my needs, but real at the basis, I think it's wanting to have a sense of love and care that we often didn't experience early on.
Good. So coming back to the whole triad, the heart triad as a whole, I would add a few things. See what you think. It's motivating when heart types feel met and also mirrored by the other person and understood, as we said, but also when there is connection and when there is exchange in that connection. Even things like things being a bit more personal, people speaking in the first person and so forth. Empathy. Empathy is important for all three heart types, in my view. And another thing that I see as being motivating for heart types is positive feedback, receiving positive feedback.
Especially twos.
Yes. And would you add anything to the whole heart
types? Because I think twos need affirmation and positive feedback, I think a little more than the other two. I mean, all heart types, you know, appreciate positive feedback, but threes, for instance, I hear saying they're motivated by any feedback. Like they want to hear when they're not doing a good job. Whereas for twos, it's like, well, you can tell me when I'm not doing a good job because I want to course correct, but you also need to tell me how I'm doing a good job because I need to know that I'm on the right track and that kind of thing. And I think fours, again, want positive feedback, but maybe are also more open to all kinds of feedback than twos. So I would agree with that. Being met, connection, having like focus, a lot of focus on relationship and making good relationships and improving the status of connections, avoiding disconnection. And I would say a big motivator for two, and I can't believe I it's taken me this long to get to it, is avoiding rejection. Right. So it's just the other side, the flip side of what I've said before, but that's a big motivator, is avoiding rejection.
Very good. Shall we talk about threes?
Yes.
So a few things that I see as being especially motivating for threes: accomplishment. Goals in themselves are very motivating. Challenges, being challenged in itself, or also competition to an extent, with some differences between among the subtypes, but I think all threes can enjoy competition to a good extent. I also think that motivation itself motivates threes. It's like they get motivated with people who are motivated, and when they are motivated, then they get even more so. Mm-hmm. Dedication, hard work, and also stories of people overcoming hard situations. Mm-hmm. People, you know, making things happen that were not very probable, that not many people could make happen before. Or being number one, or you know, getting to a point where I have given 110% of myself and achieved something. And by the way, threes are not at all motivated by winning when they don't have they don't have done their best, or when they didn't deserve. They get actually very bothered by that. It's much more like, I have won because I've done my best and I've been better than others. I've, you know, merit is something, meritocracy is something that motivates threes. And in the contrary, they get extremely demotivated when there isn't meritocracy, like in teams where the leader evaluates everybody the same way.
Right.
So what would you add?
Yeah, so I would say, I definitely agree, goals are at the top of the list, but also not wasting time. So being efficient and productive, proving competence, like demonstrating competence. There's something like doing the job right in the most efficient, effective way possible, I think is a motivator. I think threes are really motivated by checking things off their list. I think threes, you know, threes are one of the types that keep lists of things to do and really check things off. They love checking things off lists of having that sense of accomplishment of I've gotten that done and it's off the list. Achievement generally, and also the rewards of achievement, like promotions, like in a work setting, you know, they can focus a little too much on the next promotion, you know, and not have a larger vision. And also, the rewards of achievement, like, you know, how I'll be viewed. So recognition of achievement. So the title that I achieved, or maybe, the wealth that I can get that I can then do something with. So rewards of achievement, but also a little bit like twos, avoiding rejection, avoiding failure, right? So sometimes threes will sense if they start to do something, if they might fail, and they won't do it. They won't be motivated to do that thing. They'll find another thing to do where they can feel more of a sense of assurance that they can be successful. Going for success, like creating successes, wins, those kinds of things can be very motivating. And sometimes it's not so much about competing with others. I think there's a lot of threes, both self-pres threes and sexual threes, that find competition a little distasteful, especially when other people see them competing. It's more like competing against my past record. It's like doing it better or faster than I did it before. I think those kinds of things can be more motivated, but also getting praise and recognition, other people acknowledging them for a job well done or something they did that was hard to do, but they did it through their hard work or their finding a way to demonstrate competence and effectiveness.
Yeah, a few more things that came to me. Of course, positive image is motivating for threes, but also people that I value valuing me. So when those people value me, then I get especially happy. People that are role models for me. And then startups of any kind, I'm not talking only about companies that are startups, but what I'm talking about is building things from scratch or from the beginning and taking them from the initial stages to reach the heights that are will be really good challenges, right? So actually, threes are not motivated in my experience when things are already going super well. They lose motivation. It's like they need the challenge. I've seen many threes give up their jobs when they didn't feel as much challenged because everything was going on already. It might be a bit different for self-pressed threes, but I think that in general, it's true about threes.
Yeah.
Good. So what about fours? Let's talk about them. Should I start or do you want to start?
Yeah, why don't you start?
Okay, so fours get motivated by expression, capacity for themselves and for other people to express themselves. And when that doesn't exist, it's very demotivating for them. And also threes want to be able to add their personal touch in things. And when everything is too much standardized, they don't like it. Or too much routine oriented and they can't create. They need to create stuff. They need to be able to do a few things differently. They are also very motivated by high levels of quality, but not even that. It's more like excellence. Excellence is a motivator. The search or seek for excellence is a very big motivator for threes, for fours, sorry. And fours also need that place where they, you know, there are some talks that are personal, and especially about some emotions. They appreciate that when that exists, but also that they're not exposed in ways that are bad for them or that make them feel shame. And they are very motivated when the other people listen to them to the end and don't interrupt them and don't judge them for being too emotional. But what would you add?
Yeah, I would say for fours, meaning and purpose are really at the top of the list, is what I hear them say. Achieving a creative vision that's meaningful and will have a positive impact. Demonstrating who they are through their self-expression or their creative expression or the work they do or their relationships. Being seen and understood as who they are and how they feel. And also, I think authenticity is a big one, like expressing their authentic feelings, being who they are in an authentic way, being seen as who they are as a specific, you know, individual who has an original contribution to make. Making that contribution and having it seen and appreciated and validated by others, I think is a really important one. And I think translating their emotions into experience, like positive or meaningful experience, like expressing themselves in relationships or expressing themselves through their work or their art. I mean, some fours say, oh, I don't feel like I'm artistic, but it's not so much about how artistic you are. I think it's more a sense of life being a creative expression itself. Seeing the poetry in things, seeing the beauty in things, seeing yourself as a authentic person with someone who has something that only you can deliver. I think it's a little bit more like that. Like it's the self-expression and sometimes aesthetic sensibility, just a sense of when you get that thing that where things fit together just right and look really good, not from a superficial point of view, but they create an experience of life that is deep and rich in terms of how it makes you feel, especially and how it makes other people feel.
Yeah, very complimentary lists that you did and I did. Brilliant. So let's talk a little bit about head types as a whole, the whole triad, fives, sixes, and sevens. So I think that understanding stuff is very important. And then there are two things. One is things that make sense and making sense of things. Both things I think are very motivating for head types. And then there needs to be intellectual development and intellectual challenges all the time. If that doesn't exist, it's like death for all mental types. Then logic and rationality, there needs to be at least some of that. I don't think it's true that head types want only that. Some do. But I think that there needs to be at least, you know, some. And people should be able to come back to that more rational stance if there's too much emotionality or too much like instinct, as in being impatient or being like impulsive. So there is this need that people come back to a bit more rationality and planning and finding out what might not go well and talking scenarios. And then also I think that head types like to be told explanations about things, the whys. But also they appreciate when other people are interested in their explanations. It's not pleasant at all for a head type when the other person listening is not interested in understanding their thinking process and they want to know just the bottom line. I think that bothers in general head types. Learning is a big motivator, and then connecting the dots between different things and doing some more complex analysis of stuff. But bringing different things together and building bridges between two areas of knowledge, for instance.
Right.
What would you add?
I wouldn't add anything. I think that's a very complete list of what motivates head types generally. So I say let's go to type five, and I think you should start.
I wonder why. So yeah, what motivates fives? People who are not very invasive, who understands their need for space at times, and who don't push them to provide answers right away, who give them the opportunity to be with something. And yeah, I think it's very motivating when they can control the timing of things, when they lose that sense of being able to control the timing of things. It's very hard. It's very demotivating to have a situation that there is too many demands and requests or even expectations on them. But it's very, very much motivating when fives can learn, when the learning curve is positive, when they will use their intellect and find out stuff, or whatever they will do will include using the head. I think that sometimes it might be even something simpler, not exactly challenging. It could be just exercising the head and thoughts and so forth. And people who talk about meaningful things, I think one of the worst things for fives is small talk. It's really almost unbearable, and gossip together with that thing is unbearable. And last, I'd say that one thing that motivates fives is people who don't play their games completely, dealing with them in a way that's too formal, or people who are distant when it comes to the proximity with the five. So I think that might sound paradoxical, but it's more like, they like people who can keep a distance, but they don't like people who become distant, like totally distant. It's like, let me do that, and don't play my game, because I may want to come to you, and just give me time, be patient, and, let me do the movement of coming back closer to you. So don't go completely away.
Yeah. So, of course, that's the best list because it's created by an actual five. I would just emphasize knowledge, data, learning, mastering the information about something that they're interested in, and then expressing that information to an interested audience or using that information for a useful purpose. It seems to me that motivates fives. I think there's a lot around knowledge and information and becoming an expert in something that's really interesting, deeply interesting. We say fives like to go deep on things. There can be a lot of enthusiasm about the area of intellectual interest. And sometimes it's just knowing it or reading it, and sometimes it's sharing it with others, I think can be very motivating. Also, on the other side of things, I think maintaining their sphere of personal control is what I would put it under, maintaining a sense of control around boundaries, time, space, depending on subtype, I think, which could be like minimizing demands, maintaining independence. I see this in work settings a lot, like wanting to have a lot of independence over their own workspace and time and what they're working on, and maybe how and when they share what they're thinking with others, and doing things in a way that maintains their own sense of control over how they're going to do what they do and who they're going to, be with, connect with, talk with, maintaining a sense of not having to share their energy or thoughts with others if they don't want to. So kind of like maintaining a sense of security around their own interactions with others.
Good list for fives. I'm glad you understand fives more and more.
Yes, it's come from painful experience. Or in some cases.
Or which of us? Okay, let's talk about sixes. So a few things that motivate sixes. Transparency, truth. And at the same time, when the other person needs to be a bit direct and frank, they need support from the other person and reassurance, especially reassurance. They need to feel that the person is there for them, that they can count on the person. Of course, that the person is trustworthy, but also that they have a constant presence with support and reassurance. But they also don't like people who just protect them. It's like, I need that other person to dare a little bit in ways that I can't dare, and then I can follow. That is motivating. You know, people who model for them things that they need to do themselves. Like they like people who go do a little bit of dangerous things so that they can go together. You know, it's very motivating for a six to see an example of that if it's not exaggerated. And then strength. You know, they need to see strength in the decisions, the environment, the other person. They don't like people who feel weak. It's not too different from eights in this sense, but it's different that those people still need to be sensitive to them and to others and not imposing. People who dare, and they appreciate some push most of the times, but above all, they need some push. And they soon get motivated because they go into action with the other person's help, that push. But they really get motivated when other people provide a little bit of stability, a bit more in the sense of predictability. What would you add about sixes?
I'm noticing something very interesting about your list. It's very much aimed at what others can do that make them feel motivated. So I'm wondering if that's because your wife is a six, and so you've been studying it from that angle. Because yeah.
I think it's because sixes project.
I was thinking more about what motivates the six internally, not in terms of what others can do. But very interesting.
I hope Julieta doesn't listen to this episode.
Well, you've learned your lessons well, so that's probably the good news for her. I think what motivates sixes is the activity of managing risk. I think there's something really motivating and interesting and enlivening about that. You know, when your job is figuring out what the dangers are, the problems are, and solving problems proactively, managing and calculating the risks, analyzing the situation, gaining information so that you can find a path forward that that sort of maximizes the possibility of success, and avoiding any dangers or problems, and minimizes anything happening that could go wrong. I think there's a way that's really motivating, that sixes find that challenge interesting and motivating in itself. So figuring out what could go wrong, and then using their inner resources, their intellect, their experience, their desire to keep people safe or to do a good job. All of those, I think, get activated and motivating them in the things that they do.
Oh, good. Should we talk about seven?
Sure.
So positivity is a big one. You know, both from them, when they are positive, but also when others are positive, it's very difficult for them when they are in an environment without that. Mm-hmm. Or freedom is a big one for them. When they feel free, freedom of movement, they don't feel stuck or limited. So less limits is motivating. Or letting them, you know, structure themselves in different ways. So, for instance, in a company that allows them to do their own times and hours, when they will be allowed to take some time off after a long, you know, hard work. Also, less hierarchy. Hierarchy is more demotivating for sevens. And when authority can be shared, there is more equalized authority, and we can even have a more collegial environment where we can make decisions together and after lots of brainstorming. So brainstorming is very motivating for sevens. Creativity also. But sevens also get highly motivated with change in itself and environments that are open for change, and also people who are smart. That's something that for all head types, I think, but also for sevens, you know, they get happy with people who are smart and who engage with them in the brainstorming that they like to do, in the thinking of things and discussions, and informality is my last one here in my initial list. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. Positivity at the top of the list for sure. Optimism, good feelings among the people they're with about what's happening and what can happen. And freedom and assuring freedom. I think sometimes it can almost like the opportunity to chart their own path forward and not be limited by other people. And if there are potential limitations that come from others, I think that sevens can kind of get motivated by the mental challenge of getting around the obstacles that other people or life might put in their path, and finding a way to kind of do what they want to do and get what they want and have the experiences they want by sort of maneuvering around limitations. And that can be mentally through ideas or finding different ways to do things that are creative. But I think that can be motivated. I think also just a positive future vision. So they're, you know, in leadership, they tend to be the visionaries. They tend to be the people who are talking about a new world that people haven't imagined yet. So imagining a positive future vision, and like you said, brainstorming new ideas, novelty, we're going to do something that's never been done before. We're going to make things better or make people happier. In a way that we haven't before. I think there's differences among the subtypes. I think for some subtypes, pleasure is a big motivator. Fun, like I'm going to do something fun, or I'm planning a trip, or I'll do this work, but after the work, then I'll get to the fun part. and often having fun with others, you know, making themselves happy, like thinking of something they have to look forward to and then moving toward that. And experiencing it, and sometimes a little more focused on themselves, sometimes also focused on sharing those good times and those positive experiences with others.
Right. A few other topics that I would like to add to the list of motivators for sevens. Opportunities, also leisures to an extent with that that comment that it depends a bit perhaps on subtype, because at times it's not as much having leisure time, but making everything that they already do fun and nice. Yeah. And but anyway, seizing the day, carpe diem, mm-hmm. right? But one last comment is that to me, what I see is that even for sevens who have been doing inner work, the way to feel motivated to stick with the task that they don't wish to do anymore is to establish a reward, but not from other people.
Right.
That it needs to be themselves establishing what their reward would be, will be when they finish it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, I'll get to the fun part. I'll get to a specific positive experience I'll have if I can get through this negative or boring experience. Yeah. Okay.
Good.
I think we did a good job covering the motivators for the nine types and the three dominant instincts.
So it's time for our top five.
And what's our top five today?
Today, our top five is the top five types that tend to hold grudges.
Can't wait.
You know what I mean by hold grudges, right?
Yes, because I looked up the dictionary.
I just want to make sure the translation is working. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the top five people who have a hard time getting over being angry at someone or having a problem with someone and letting that go.
What is your fifth?
Okay. My fifth is nine. And now that I say it, it might have been higher up, but yeah, I think nine. I think you may not always know it.
Oh yeah.
When a nine is holding a grudge, except for potentially by some passive aggressive behavior. But I think because nines don't express when they're angry and don't express when they have a problem with someone, they just, you know, keep it inside. It's harder for it to go away. And so they may kind of stay with, some irritation or difficulty they have with someone rather than risk the conflict that might ensue if they bring it up. What about you? What's your number five?
It's type six, because I do think that at times they come back to things but I don't see as much holding grudges. It's a bit more like holding concerns that don't go, but sometimes it feels like holding grudges. And I might be biased because my wife is a six.
Yes.
But anyway, I think that in general, sixes have some of that. Not much.
Yeah, well, six is my number four. Ooh. So I agree with you, and I see your number five and raise you one to number four. Because I think sixes have a hard time getting over things if they remain worried.
Do you think these are grudges?
I think it can be a grudge because I think sometimes in the way sixes react to people, there's anger involved. Mm-hmm. With a sexual six, it might be expressed. With the other sixes, it might not be expressed directly. But it's almost like if someone created a problem or was a threat or did something that the six didn't think was good.
That's true.
And it doesn't get worked through, which it may not, because the six may not say something. The six may kind of stay suspicious. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And by staying suspicious, there can be this sort of, it's almost like if I let go, it might happen again. It's a little bit having, I think, to do with trust. Like if someone breaks their trust, it's hard for them to get that back. And so I was thinking of it in that way. Like if someone did something to you as a six and that lowered your trust and kind of created more suspicion, it might be hard to overcome that quickly. And so I took that as being a grudge because there can be a sort of an angry reaction or like I have a problem with you kind of.
Okay.
So what's your number four?
So we switched positions. Nine is nine. For the same reasons you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I think nines really hold grudges and really not many people know about them. So if you live with a nine, just know that that might be one of the problems that you're facing on the relationship, that it's producing bad consequences.
Yes.
And you have no idea that that's it.
Yeah. So we're together so far because I could easily switch my 5 and 4 to see what you're saying. So I think so far we're together. So what's your number 3 then?
4. Type 4.
Mike, me too.
Oh, wow.
We've got a mind meld on this one. That's surprising. That hasn't happened in a while.
yes. So type 4 is... They stay attached to things that are not too good.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's more like just being sensitive to what happened. But sometimes it's really like, especially when they communicate it to someone else, either to the person or to a friend, they elaborate that as grudges. Although it might be more like some sensitivity and they just need to release. What I think is that the more they talk, the more they express, the smallest the problem become. And fours tend to not let go a little bit. So I think that leads to it being number 3. But what are your reasons?
Yeah, I put type 4 at number 3. Also because, you know, they tend to be more in touch with their emotions. So if they have a problem with someone, that can stir up a good amount of feelings. And like you said, sometimes fours have a hard time letting go of their feelings if they're strong, if it doesn't get resolved, if they don't feel heard. I think it's just hard for them to move on if they haven't had some sort of acknowledgement or validation of how they feel or resolution to the situation.
So my number 2 is type 2.
I had a feeling it would be somewhere high up on your list.
Let's see if it will be high up in your list. So type 2, I see that because of how emotional they are, and because of
having a business partner that's a 2.
yeah, biases here. Now feeling offended and you know, needing to elaborate on things and find it hard to truly forgive in the inside, and feeling, I think that feeling offended is really common, and I think it does lead to holding grudges. But what do you think?
Well, my number 2 is 1. And that's because, you know, they are anger types, a little bit like 9s. They don't always express their anger, but they can get irritated or frustrated or even very angry with someone who, you know, for various reasons, and have a hard time letting that go if the person doesn't admit their mistake or allow themselves to be held accountable. It can be hard for ones to kind of feel okay about moving on. I see that in some of my 1 friends. And it's almost like if someone violates one of their principles, that's hard to be okay with, you know? And so that's why I thought of type 1 at my number 2 spot. But I do have type 2 as my number 1.
Wow.
Yes.
So you're not holding grudges. Oh. The fact that I said that.
I might.
Because you can say it, but I can't. Yeah.
Well, I'm not offended because I think it's true. Okay. I think I get offended more when I feel like I've been accused of something unfairly, but I would say holding grudges is something I have done.
Explain us a bit more about that process with Jews.
The process of holding a grudge?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that we're sensitive. And like you said, I think easily offended, we may look like we're not easily offended, or we may not show it, a little bit like 9s. But inside, you know, if someone hurts our feelings, and again, our feelings are rather easily hurt, maybe mine is a self-preservation 2, even more than other 2s. But it's easy for us to feel slighted or insulted, you know, especially around like feeling like we've done something for other people, or we've gone out of our way to be generous or to take care of someone else's needs, and that doesn't get reciprocated.
And do you think that in general for Jews it's hard to let go?
I do, because I think again we're emotional types. It's a little little bit like with fours, only I think fours tend to be a little more upfront with how they're feeling and express it a little more honestly. And so I think for twos, some of those feelings don't get expressed and they don't. And so like, for instance, I think for a four, if the other person isn't acknowledging something, that can be hard for them. And same with twos, only sometimes it's hard for us to express what we're upset about or to really kind of hang in there and try to make themselves understood. And even after, and so sometimes it's like, it's a secret grudge, right? Like, okay, that person hurt my feelings, but I'm not telling them, but there's something about holding on to that.
But you might tell someone else.
You might tell someone else. Yeah. Sometimes it's just to vent the emotion or sometimes I want to get it resolved, but I'm too afraid to say it to the person directly because they might not listen. They might reject me. It might get worse, or I'm afraid of damaging that relationship. So there's a lot of reasons why I think it just can be hard for twos to express when they're angry or hurt. And because of that, there's not often an opportunity for the other person to address it. And like I said, it becomes a little bit of a secret thing that the two is sort of holding on to that becomes a little bit, maybe for me, I think sort of there's a little bit of vengeance, like, well, I'm going to take myself away from you, or I'm not going to be your friend, or I'm not going to go out of my way for you. But because it's not shared, it becomes a little bit more like, okay, I need to hold on to my anger to protect myself against you hurting me again. So I think I've noticed one time I was really trying to self-observe my emotions, and I noticed it was hard for me to let go of my anger. And when I really was looking at why is that, because I was really trying to study my emotions, what I realized is that underneath the anger was fear. And it was like, if I let go of my anger, if I forgive, I'm afraid that I'll be hurt again in the same way by that person. And so I think when the anger comes from hurt, which it often does for all of us, that hurt underneath, it's almost like I need to still stay angry at you, both because it's really interesting. I notice when I do typing interviews with twos, I think a lot of people don't think of twos as at the top of the list of people who are really concerned with fairness. But I find that twos are really concerned with fairness. And so sometimes
in a relationship,
yeah. In a general sense, it's like, if I feel like I haven't been treated fairly, it's hard. If that doesn't get acknowledged and changed, it's hard to shift out of that, you know, again. But I think at the bottom of it, it's fear of being hurt again in the same way. Like, if I'm offended by you and you know, you'll do it again, if I let my guard down, it's a little bit like that.
Right. My number one is type one, and it has to do with resentment and all the things that you talked about. Mm-hmm. I think that it's hard for ones to let go. They stay with the anger inside. Mm-hmm. Mostly they internalize anger a lot. And yeah, and I want to make a comment that we didn't have eights on our top fives.
Yeah.
And I think it makes sense because eights, you know, they communicate what they don't like, and then they even forget. However, I want to say that eights do hold a little bit of grudges because they don't completely forget.
You know, I think it probably depends on the situation. I think sometimes eights are, one of the things I admire about eights is they can say, be really out there with their, what they don't like or with their anger, and then it's over, you know, a lot of the time. I think more than other types, but I agree with you that it's not 100% of the time.
Because I guess what I'm thinking right now is that there are some people who count, like, this is the second time, this is the third time, and I think eights count. Mm. Like, I don't count.
I count.
Yeah, you can. Yes. And I don't think sevens count, you know. Right. So I just think that eights wouldn't be my number nine, you know.
Right.
And so one is my top.
Yeah, makes top sense.
Type.
Makes sense.
See, I don't think that twos are that bad.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sort of surprised. And as usual, maybe I'm a little bit harder on twos. Mm. But I also think it's real, and I also know myself, and it's something I still need to work on, not holding a grudge, although I've gotten better, I would say. Okay, so that does it this time for our top five. Thank you for listening. Join us again next time for our Enneagram 2.0 podcast, where we talk about all things Enneagram.